From every mountain and valley the world over are flowers and plants of simple beauty. Some hold a natural wonder, chemicals that soothe pain and inspire euphoria. At times, they've been hailed as a gift of heaven. But in the last century, they've been condemned as a scourge of man. Once, marijuana, cocaine, opium, ecstasy, LSD, even heroin were perfectly legal. Today, they compel a war on drugs. Did these plants and drugs change? Or did we?
Drugs are menacing our society.
It's like a five-hour orgasm.
Used wisely can produce the greatest ecstasy that man's knows.
Have you been diagnosed with depression and struggle with sadness?
Maybe you're scared of being criticized.
Loss of interest, aches, and pain.
Always thinking something terrible.
Ask your doctor about Effexor.
Ask your doctor about Cymbalta.
Talk to your doctor about Zoloft.
So talk to your healthcare professional.
Get your doctor today.
Your doctor.
Tell your doctor.
Contact your doctor immediately. Doctor.
Talk with your doctor.
Over 40 years ago, leading psychiatrists met in Puerto Rico to map out their vision of the future.
We see a developing potential for nearly a total control of human emotional status, mental functioning, and will to act.
Their plan? To create by the year 2000 a range of psychiatric drugs regulating every aspect of human behavior.
I was diagnosed with depression and put on Paxil.
ADD, and I was prescribed Ritalin.
General anxiety disorder. Prescribed Zoloft.
Bipolar disorder, and I take lithium.
PTSD, Zoloft.
I was on Paxil.
And they placed me on Zoloft.
They gave me Adderall.
I was prescribed Siptimu.
Tegretol.
Lexapro. Debico.
Stelazine. Adderall.
Concerta. Lorazine.
Prozac. Lorazepam.
Effexor. Clonazepam.
Ritalin. Dexamphetamine.
Paxil. Xylert.
Prozac.
Adderall.
Elavil.
Depico. Wellbutrin. Seroquel. Etc., etc.
100 million people worldwide are on psychiatric drugs. How did this happen? Psychiatrists convinced them they were sick.
They want you to think you're diseased from birth, and that all those experiences of life, childhood and adolescence, and teenage years and adulthood, and being a senior citizen, that these are all various stages of disease.
Because let's face it, we've all been depressed at one time. We've all been anxious at one time. These are normal emotions that we feel.
Every emotional and spiritual problem is reduced to a label.
And of course, all of those diseases require pharmaceutical treatments. This is big, big business.
While generating a healthy income, claiming to be medical professionals, psychiatrists will freely confess that their profession is devoid of science.
We don't really have any specific blood tests or other tests that are definitive for any mental illness whatsoever.
It would be neat if it would become much more scientific.
Well, if you go to my office and you tell me that you're depressed, there's nothing, and no blood sample, whatever, no tests.
There are not current available tests to verify your diagnosis.
I don't use any tests.
Do not have a test to say, well, this is this disorder and this is the best medication for this disorder.
For many years we thought we had the tests nailed down, but it turned out that they weren't of any value.
If you don't know what's causing the symptoms, then to give somebody something to alleviate the symptoms is close to impossible.
By the time a drug's approved and it hits the general population, we don't know even 50% of the side effects that are involved with that drug.
And these pills cause heart attacks and liver problems and immune system problems and lots of other medical problems. So you're playing with fire.
Let me tell you why you're here.
You have 210 story office buildings.
We just witnessed some kind of...
You don't find a desk.
Secondary.
You don't find a chair.
Follow-up explosion on the World Trade Center.
You don't find a telephone.
Some kind of explosion. A lot of smoke come out of the top.
110 stories high. They are no longer there.
The building collapsed to dust.
To dust. To dust. To dust. To dust. To dust. To dust. This is your last chance.
I would ask.
After this, there is no turning back.
Once all the facts are out.
You take the blue pill.
For your understanding.
The story ends.
And for your forgiveness.
You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want.
media is the...
You take the red, red...
...nervous system of a democracy.
You stay in Wonderland.
If it's not functioning well, the democracy can't function.
And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
The democracy can't function.
The red pill.
Take the red pill.
You have to let it all go.
Take the red pill.
Fear.
911truth.org.
Doubt.
WhatReallyHappened.com.
You disbelieve.
TC7.net.
Free your mind.
Take the red pill.
You know, I still get goosebumps every time this intro kicks. Right after
take the red pill, and just the jam starts.
You know why? I fucking love what I do. I am lucky. I am one of the rare people in the world who has gotten a chance to take his passions and turn it into a paycheck. And the memories are just hundreds of them, thousands. Hundreds I can still remember. And here I am with my own show on new media, and it's like starting my career all over again. It's so fucking cool. It really is. Hit the post.
That's right.
I remember the first thing I ever said on the radio, 1981. I was running board for a New York Yankee game. I'll tell you about the board in a second. But the station identification, let's pause 10 stations, 10 seconds for station identification along the New York Yankees network. And we used to have a cart that, you know, you play it, you know, just punch the cart and it's the official, you know, 10 second recording. Well, guess what? Mark Sinclair, my first official program director, comes in and he goes, hey man, why don't you do the ID live? I called my mom. I go, Mom, I'm going to be on the radio. And she was a 7:30 start, 8 o'clock. I'm going to be... This is what I said. Phil Rizzuto, for the money. Okay, let's pause 10 seconds for stations to identify themselves along the New York Yankees radio network. Click. WIXY, East Longmeadow, Springfield, is WIXY 16. Current temperature, 57 degrees. Except I said it more like, WIXY. You could hear the nervousness in my voice. You saw him in a Springfield? Hey, Mom, I'm on the radio. I didn't really say that. But that's the first thing I ever, ever said. Funny things you remember, huh? So here it is, Dangerous Conversation. Let me back down on that just a notch. I'm driving that a little, okay? Live on the internets. A show that I gave birth to in one network, and I've now carried it to here, and there's a different show on another network that'll be starting soon because I'm smart. And I have two sides of my personality, the spiritual side and the 8-year-old that lives in my head. And over here at Radio Influence, you get the full 8-year-old, and over there, you get a little bit more of the guy. Hopefully, I've grown into his man. So I get to do that here and there. So welcome to Dangerous Conversation. As you heard in the opening audio, I always love to play some spoken word before the intro. Kind of gives you a little, hey, what's going on? Oh, I wonder what this show is going to be about. The first piece I played was just a tiny piece from a wonderful documentary that was on the History Channel. It's called Illegal Drugs and How They Got That Way. And they do each drug. They do, I think they do heroin. Obviously, they do the opiate, you know, altogether. They do cannabis. Cocaine, I'm trying to remember the other one she mentioned here, with that sultry narrator voice. And then, of course, I segued into what is the open to a documentary called Making a Killing, which is all about Big Pharma and what they're telling you you need or you should be taking, or and even worse, your children. But I gotta give this little disclaimer here. You know, I have friends that take disclaimers, and it's not working out well because you can't eat a disclaimer. I have friends that are taking psychotropics. Three that I can name off the top of my head. All three tried to kick it cold turkey. All three said they couldn't do it. And as far as I know, as of today, they're still on those things. I took an antidepressant in 2007. I lost my job, my girlfriend, my house, my dog. What else am I leaving out? My mind? Well, you know, when you bottom out, a lot of us that are old enough, we're gonna have a bottom out moment in our life. I went to a doctor. He goes, "Let's put you on an antidepressant." I'm like, "Yay, magic pills! Yay, magic pills! Mother's little helper!" You know, I was all about it. I was like, "Okay." He goes, "They're gonna take a while to kick in. They're gonna take a little while to kick in." And okay, I see you. You know, and I got to about month number three, and I'd wake up every morning and go, "Yeah, I feel nothing," and I go to bed at night and go, "Oh, yeah, I still feel nothing." It's like being in the fog, literally in your head. I felt like I was in a fog. There was nothing, there was no, you know, up and down. Life is ebb and flow. Okay, there was a vibration, a frequency. You say, you know, they always show the frequency is that kind of that squirrely line that goes up and down and up and down. And there's called peaks and valleys. Well, that's the vibration of light waves. That is how our life works. That's the same driving force that you're going to have amazing moments in your world, and you're going to have shitty, sucky-ass moments either you caused, somebody else caused, or was completely out of your control. There's no way around that. The question is, can you deal with it? And as you heard in that intro from Making a Killing, in the 1950s, they got together. Okay, created the DSM, the Diagnostic, I should know the name of this, I'm doing a, but it slips me, manual. Basically, it's the big giant book that tells you, instead of being shy, you have social distortion. You know, they make up the disease because they've got the pill. They go, "Wow, this thing," and if you've ever seen the movie Brain Candy, I can't, you know what? I should probably play something from Brain Candy. Maybe I will. If you don't, it's The Kids in the Hall. And no, I don't live in the combat zone. I have the windows open. It's gorgeous here in Florida right now. And there is a fire station not too far from us. But yeah, Brain Candy, Kids in the Hall, Google it, 1997, 98, around that. And they really, you got to remember, Prozac was way before that. And even before that was Valium. My dad used to take a Valium and drink a big glass of wine. I kid you not. 50% that put up with my mom. And the other 50% was to, he was a public speaker. He was a religious guy. He ran a formation center. And so he had he had to get up and speak in front of people. And he had this love for his creator that was amazing. And it just oozed from him. But I remember sitting at the kitchen table when I was, 12, 13 years old at the time. He'd be sitting there, and he'd have his Bible open, and it'd be about 5 o'clock on a Saturday. And he had to give a talk at 9 o'clock. And my mom would come in and go, "What are you going to talk about?" And he goes, "I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know." And she'd always go, "Don't worry. It'll come to you." Because if anybody had ever seen my father speak about the love of his creator through his Catholicism, don't get me wrong, I'm not going to rank on the religion I was raised. I kind of see through it now and all the dogma. But my father was giving people hope, at least in my eyes. And it's a long story. And by the way, I'm going to do a show about my past, not just my radio past, because I talk about that all the time. But all the way back to how I was raised, because you always have to remember you're recycling new audiences when you do a show. Not everybody knows you. Now, right now, there are people listening that know this show exists, and then there are people that download it that know it exists. But sooner or later, people are going to go, "Oh, who's this Ledge guy?" So I'll give you an example. I'm debuting Dangerous Conversation on another network next Monday, and that show is just, "Hi. You need to get to know me." If you go back to show number one here at Radio Influence, it's the same thing. Nobody, I treat it like nobody knows who you are. They don't know what the fuck you believe in. They don't know what you think about. You've got to give them, "Hi, I'm Ledge. Here's the foundation of my life. Here's what I think and feel. And this is why I think and feel it. And now you know me." And once you know the host. So my father had that same gift. And he was able to do that. People would see him speak for the first time, and There was just a humility about him. But guess what? Social anxiety. This was a man who was shy. Honestly, my mom was the mouth of the house. Big time. Okay? The only time my dad ever argued with her is when he had a couple of scotches. And they do it from across the house. A small house, but they would never argue face-to-face, like 2 feet away. My mom would be all the way in the kitchen. My dad would be in the bedroom. And she'd be going, yeah, dad, and he, all of a sudden, you wait 2, 3, 4. Well, that's because I'm already. They'd argue across the house. So there was no way to avoid it, unless you went out and played, which I did a lot. But my dad was a shy guy. So for him to get up and be a public speaker, even though he was born with that gift, and even though I always say my show comes not from me, but through me, I'm the conduit. Well, my dad was the same way. So what he would do is he would take just a couple of things in his Bible, and he would write down, you know, Mark, whatever. I don't know the Bible that well. Go figure. And he would have like 3 or 4 footnotes, and he would just rip off the page like this. And then he would open the Bible, and he would just put it in there. And then he'd close it. And it's now 6 o'clock. And he's got to speak to small groups, very small groups. By the way, it's easier to speak to a large crowd. Because you know at least 50% of the crowd likes you. And if you're speaking to a crowd of 2,000 people, you got 1,000 people in your corner. But if you're speaking to 90 people in a quiet room and there's no applause or laughter, this is a chapel and they're talking about Jesus and all those things. It was, I would say it was a high-pressure thing. You know, this isn't Martin Luther King standing at a monument speaking to thousands of people. It's much easier to speak to or perform in front of very large audiences. I know it's ironic, but it is. A smaller, quieter crowd is a little bit tougher to win over because when 1,000 people are laughing, the other 2,000 are like, what am I missing out on? But when you have a small group of people and you only win over 10, that's when you hear the crickets. And my dad had certainly face planted on some of his talks. So what did he do? Valium! Daddy's little helper, and a glass of wine. Oh, yes, it's for medicinal purposes. Well, you know, he takes it at about 6:30. By the time he gets up on that little platform, he's all loosey-goosey, and he opens the Bible, and it just flows. Well, guess what I use? I don't use Valium. By the way, it's a twist-off. This would be my dad's wine, right? Excuse me. This would be my dad's wine. And my Valium is cannabis. So, a long story short, or a long story not quite as long, I think we all need a little something in our corner from time to time. Life is difficult. Life is tough. If someone dies and you're into steep, sad depression, and you just can't dig out of that hole, and you go on an antidepressant for 3 or 4 months, and you go to a therapist, that's very important here when you talk about using drugs, is remember, if you're just going to mask your pain and never deal with your pain, you're fucked. You're never, ever, ever going to deal with it. All you're going to do is dump one thing on another for 20 or 30 or 40 years. And you got to be able to deal with those things. I'm included on that. And I found that cannabis helped me, I don't know, it sounds cheesy, but helped me connect to me. It just, I don't know how, I don't know why, I know how, you know, Delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol, you know, it's a molecule and it interacts with the brain. And I get the science, but it doesn't always work perfect with everybody. I have friends that just make them paranoid and they don't like it. And I have other people that live by it. So tonight on the show, when we get to, excuse me, what we're talking about, we're going to talk a little, you're going to hear from Joe Rogan on DMT. We're going to play a little bit more of that documentary on Making a Killing so you can get the idea of Big Pharma isn't about making you happier, healthier, or more balanced. They're about taking your money. That's what they want. They want your cash. So what do? Well, Diagnostic, son of a bitch, DMS, DSM, a Scholastic Manual. Basically, it was a big book of How many, you know, now they have like restless leg syndrome. Basically, you'll hear it ballooned. It ballooned. Why? Because they kept coming up with new drugs. Did you hear the people list those drugs on that intro? I'd never heard of half of those. Now, they're all related, and most of them are the same drug distributed by different drug manufacturers. So they're all like, and some are derivatives of a drug. So I get that part, but it's all about money. You think your 8-year-old should be on an antidepressant? Here's an idea. If they're shy, help them to learn how to socialize. Yeah. It's not easy. There's always the shy person. There's always the, you know, believe me, we all have issues. But a drug should help you through an issue. And then later on, you're good. Most of the time. DMT and drugs at that level, ayahuasca, psilocybin, LSD, those are mind expansion drugs. That's a completely different conversation. We will talk a little about that tonight, and we're going to talk about Big Pharma, and we will visit that. We're going to play some audio from Amber Lyon's website. That is reset.me, reset.me. Now, Amber, you've heard me talk about her before. It was a CNN anchor. Not anchor, but she could have been. She's gorgeous. Excuse me. And, you know, she did a documentary about Bahrain, and she decided she wanted to talk to the terrorists and get the other side of a story. Gee, go figure. Isn't that what news should be? Got some audio from Brent Hatley tonight I'm thinking of playing, too, about how media's fucking it up. Actually, you know what? We'll probably do that because we're going to talk CBS and iHeart, iFart, whatever they're called. But DMT, all those, that's when things are cool and you want to get to know yourself a little better or challenge what you call your five senses and that kind of stuff. And yes, of course, they're all made illegal. And Bill Hicks used to say, geez, what would happen to the military-industrial complex and all the money and all the bombers and all the death if we suddenly became aware that we're all one? It's bad for business. Psilocybin's bad for it's not good. It's not good for it's not good for capitalism. It's not good for conquest. It's not good for empire. You don't want an entire society enlightened or at least thinking outside the box. That's dangerous. You can't have that. So if you notice, the ones that are illegal, most of the ones that are illegal aren't there to numb you. They're there to make you go, wow, this is a different experience. And then when the experience ends, you start thinking, you scratch your head, you do a little introspection. Maybe have some demons. They go, I had a bad trip. I go, why? Well, my dad used to beat me with his cane, and my mom used to burn cigarettes on my chest. Well, what do you think you're going to think about when you're tripping? Your life. Think about things. You need to get that poison out of you and then do that substance. And then maybe that empathy and that love and that compassion and all those other, the opposite side, the good side of a trip comes to you. We all know what the drug cultures are about. I mean, cocaine was about energy and partying. Once you got into MDMA, you know, if you've ever been to a rave or if you've ever done X or MDMA, you realize, it's just serotonin being squeezed out of your head. But you know what it does? It takes all your fear and removes your fear. And you walk up to complete strangers and go, hi, how you doing? How often would you do that in public if you didn't have two cocktails in you, or would you just plain do it completely sober? Some people can. Most people can't. So drugs and changing our consciousness or temporarily rerouting it has been around forever. Forever. Peyote is another one. You know, Native Americans, this was so mind expanding to them that they didn't build a religion around it. They incorporated it into the religion so they could say, you know, we're going to talk to you about gods and great spirits. And you're sitting there with your five senses and this desk is real and I'm real and everything else is bullshit. And then suddenly you take peyote
And you're like, Young Guns.
You see the size of that chicken?
I love that movie. And I also love that scene. She's my butterfly and I'm her. What's the other one?
I'm trying to remember. Oh, yeah. They can't see us, man. We're in the spirit world.
And they did peyote in that movie. Except Charlie Sheen. He stayed sober. He was like, nope. They passed him the bowl and he went right by him. But yeah, Native Americans. And of course, with ayahuasca, that goes into the South Americans. And, you know, we're talking hundreds, thousands of years of use. Okay, Far Eastern medicines, the same thing. So big government doesn't like that. They don't want you thinking about love and caring and oneness and that the idea of, you know, we are just a bunch of little fucking microbes on a floating rock. And this tiny little rock is going around this big ball of hydrogen. They want you thinking, them evil Muslims are taking your jobs and they want to blow you up. They want you fearing things. Because that's how you control people. It's old school. So there's two sides of this. Actually, it's more than two sides, but they want you numb, they want you dumb, and they don't want you thinking. And if you are going to try to deal with changing your consciousness, they don't want you buying a quarter ounce down the street. They want you buying their official government-approved pill. And we now, more of us, through our experience, that's what Amber Lyons doing. I'll get back to her story here. Through our own experience, are removing our fear. I've never done blow. I knew I wasn't built for it, and there was no way I was going to do it. But I have friends that did it. Friends. I have hundreds of people I know that was doing it around me throughout my radio career. It's no big deal. It was their world, their life, whatever. But the whole idea is, when it got into cannabis or got into DMT or got into MDMA, that was more of my style. And it was more for expanding my consciousness than it was from killing my pain. But I did do quite a bit of X after a big breakup in my life. So there's, you know, self-medicating is what they call that. But it was also a great experience to stand in the woods and just listen to nature for six straight hours. You know, but basically, yes, I made up my mind about that substance through my personal experiences with them. And that's what changes people's ideas. It's much like granny's going to eat a pot brownie to help her with her arthritis. And not only does it kill her pain, she's like, hey, I feel happy. No constipation, no opiate addiction. What do you think Big Pharma wants? Why do you think legalizing cannabis is so difficult in this country? It's because Big Pharma does not want grandma eating the pot brownie that you can grow in your backyard, make yourself, give to her with no side effects, no chance of overdose. They want grandma on their shit. They're pushers, and they want the business. And they have the billions of dollars of advertising. Billions. They spent $3.5 billion a year advertising all those drugs, all those golf tournaments, every time you turn on a basketball game, football game, just like the intro that I played. Do you suffer restless? How the hell? Okay. I digress. Amber Lyon was trying to give people two sides of a story about a documentary. And she decided to tell the one of the bad guy. It was a great documentary, and it was supposed to run on CNN Europe, and it never ran. They pulled it. There's like, no way. We don't want people thinking that there's two sides to a story. We want them thinking what we want them to think. So Amber said, fuck you. But being in those war zones and being around, let's say, less than, I don't know, your average American street, you're walking down a street and there's a dead kid or there's starving animals and every building's blown up. And that's going to generate some PTSD. So she went through it, and she decided to self-medicate, and rather than go to Big Pharma, she did her own thing. It's well-documented, and she talks about it openly, and she's very proud of it. So she set up reset.me, R-E-S-E-T.me. And this is why I love what she's doing. Every single person who chooses to do a substance on their own, adult, of course, and they either good, bad, or indifferent with it, can testify to the experience. And what does she do? She collects the stories. So we'll play a couple of those tonight as well. Joe Rogan, DMT, and I am going to play, believe me, I know it's about a half-hour monologue here, but that's what I do. But I want to talk a little bit about CBS Radio, soon to be. Exactly. They're selling their radio stations. Now, they own 117 stations. And the thing about CBS through the years is they didn't want to be on, Moosnick, Maine. They wanted big radio markets, New York, L.A., Chicago, Boston, Frisco, D.C. So what they did after Bill Clinton doomed the industry with the Telecommunications Act, they decided, they're now known as iHeart, but, let's face it, they are the evil fucking empire. And that's when, you got to change your name. When you sit in those big buildings in New York City and all those fancy people that do all that research and they go, people hate us. Well, there's going to be a certain amount of people that are not going to like us. No, sir, you don't understand. Everybody fucking hates Clear Channel. Well, let me take it. How about we change our name? That's a brilliant idea, sir. I know. Stop kissing my ass. That was my dog trying to sleep. You know what? Hey, I'm doing a show. She's very tired. She's very tired. So CBS plans to sell it off. Now, this is two stories. This is just, and by the way, they only wanted big markets, so they didn't want to deal with small markets. And I think Tampa was one of their smallest markets, to be honest with you. And they ended up swapping out with my current part-time employer, Beasley. Well, this is going to be a good show. By the way, I'm installing a cough switch. I would recommend that many home studios find a way, and they make them, so we don't have to. And all I have to do is press a little button and do it, and you won't know the difference. Actually, you will, because right now the windows are open. You need to go outside? Why don't you go outside? Come on. You go ahead. Come on. Little sleepyhead. Let's go. Move it. Go lay down. You can lay down right there on the cold tile. Okay, cool. See ya. So CBS was, and don't get me wrong, they're the ones that syndicated Howard Stern. These guys didn't dick around, and they'd rather own 117 stations in 26 markets, very few small markets, versus the evil empire. Wait a minute. Who owned 1,200, or is it 14? I lost track. Our radio stations. We'll get to them in a second, too, by the way. So Les Moonves, whatever his name is, he changed his name, of course. Most of them do. He said he could spin off all their radio assets in the coming year. There's going to be a sale on radio stations, Dad. Acknowledging that the business has become slow growth and a drain on resources. You know what the translation is? We're losing our fucking ass. That's what that translation. I love business speak. Becomes slow growth and a drain on resources. It can be better directed to content production and digital endeavors. In other words, the internet and television, big visual media versus radio. Les confirmed the plan Tuesday during CBS's Investor Day presentation in New York City. Everybody's showing up to see if they should invest in CBS, see the stock. And he goes, yeah, we're dumping the radio, man. So, cool. So, listen, they lost $450 million in a quarter. I'm sorry, in recent months has hinted CBS was leaning towards selling some of its stations. CBS took a $484 million write-down on the value of its radio station group in the fourth quarter. In other words, you take all 117 stations and you say what they're worth. Well, they just lost half a billion in worth That's what's happening to terrestrial radio. That's what's happening. And this is why they're selling. Cumulus is rumored to buy them. They're second in line behind iHeart Studios. iHeart. The Evil Empire. The Death Star down on Gandy Boulevard here in Tampa. Those guys. Not those guys in the building. The people that run the company. Most of those people in the building are halfway decent and talented. here we go. CBS Corps' roots in radio stretch back to 1920. How about that? Yeah, and then 1996, CBS Holdings expanded dramatically with the acquisition of Mel Karmazin's Infinity Broadcasting. And, of course, Mel was the brains behind the Howard Stern syndication, which brought about 44 major market stations into the fold. Bam. Thank you, Bill Clinton. So everything has a beginning, a middle, and an end, and right now terrestrial radio is on the ropes. Now, there are still profitable clusters of stations, and there are still some profit being made, but most of the clusters, you know what they're trying to do? They're trying not to fire anybody else anymore. Not trying not to, but they're basically every single time they look at money going out, money coming in, there used to be a big gap. You know, lots of money coming in, not much. Now it's getting rough. So it's tough because a lot of people have spent decades working for a company and they're tenured and they got their vacations. And, oh, people say, what do you do? Oh, I work for CBS Radio. Not for long. It doesn't mean you get fired, but it means when someone comes in and they buy the property, what's the first thing they do? Consolidate it. They bring it to their business model. And if that happens they might bust it up. You might get Cumulus coming in and buying 20 stations. You got to remember, these are large market radio stations. These are like top 20 markets. This isn't like some 5,000 watt AM station in Iowa. These are 100,000 watt FM flamethrowers that bill millions of dollars a year. So who's going to come in and buy them? And what are they going to get for them? Very interesting. Now, you can't talk about radio and the change without at least mentioning the Evil Empire. iHeartMedia Inc., the largest radio station operation in the U.S., is trying to buy more time to grow in an industry that isn't. This is Bob Bloomberg Business, by the way. I remember only a few years ago, I'm going to call them Clear Channel. Clear Channel's debt was about $16 billion. Now it's 20.6. And they're working on a deal that would retire about $1.4 billion of its most pressing obligations. That means the thugs are at the door. I love fucking business speak. It's great. The plan marks the company's latest attempt to rein in the debt it took on in its 2008 acquisition by private equity firm Bain Capital, Mitt Romney. I always say this. Why would you buy a business that's just draining wallets, that's just losing money, firing people, cutting costs? Why would you do that? Oh, that's right. That's so you can control all those talk radio stations and all those other stations in other markets and the message going to people. Instead of having 1,400 radio station owners and 1,400 different morning people, and again, in other words, diversity, lots of opinions. If you want to control the message, you control media. Why would Bain buy a group of stations that is hemorrhaging money unless they didn't fucking care, A, and they don't, and B, you were controlling the message. So in 8, in comes Bain Capital, and let me see, what did they spend? $24 billion? The $24 billion deal that came to symbolize the excess of pre-crisis buyout boom. Remember the timing of that? Remember the 08 crisis? Well, Bain buys Clear Channel in 07-ish. In other words, they made the offer. And I think at the time, the stock was like, what, 35, 40 bucks? Reasonable. At one time, it was over 80. I used to have some. It was in my 401k. Well, Bain goes, yeah, okay, you make an offer. Well, once you sign that offer sheet, you got to stick to that. Well, what happens? 2008 cave in. Advertisers are going, man, I'm not going to advertise on the radio. I can barely pay my waitresses. Car dealerships are going out of business. All the money flowing to radio, all that's cut off. So now they're saddled with a ton of debt that from the purchase, just the, you know, the money. All the people they have to pay, and they have less, excuse me, let me try it. Maybe that'll work. So basically, I guess an opposite way of looking at this would be your girlfriend asked you to marry her, and or, you know, when am I going to get married? Either you ask me to marry you or I'm leaving, and you say, okay, leave. And then 5 days later, she hits the lottery for $100 million. And you're like, oh, man, that's bad timing. That's horrible fucking timing. Same thing. So now they're wiggling. They're definitely drying up on the vine. Lots of people have been predicting the death or the breakup of this conglomerate for a couple years now. And I hope it happens. I hope CBS doesn't just sell all their properties to one group. I hope out of 117 that, yeah, maybe five companies come in. You get a little bit more diversity in ownership. But the thing is, who are you going to get to people that want to spend money on old school FM radios when I got a hotspot in my truck or in my car and I can listen to internet radio, I can listen to podcasts, I can listen to Dangerous Conversation on Radio Influence. Why would I want to listen to Mix 104 point blah? So they're dying on the vine. And part of the reason they're dying is because of what I said. They not only did they control the message, but they, and not only did people like me become a little bit too edgy for them, but they also had a plan of, we can't have dissent. We can't have alternate voices on our stations. So what do? You stop being diverse and you start becoming homogenized, cookie cutter, and shitty. And that's what happened to them. And this audio I'm going to play you is, it's a little long. It's about 5 minutes. But it's actually Brent Hatley, back when Brent was the one of the main producers for Bubba the Love Sponge. Now, Brent and I used to work together. I taught him how to run a board. Now he works with Howard Stern. And this is an interview they're giving. I don't even know what this interview is, but what he says about media and the responsibility media has and the responsibility that the fucking people on a microphone have and how they've completely abandoned their responsibility. They were afraid of it. That's part of why people don't listen to terrestrial radio. Because it used to be diverse and you used to get different opinions. I'm not just talking your left-wing, right-wing talk radio. I'm talking some rock jock in the afternoon who's anti-war. Gee, I wonder who they were talking about. Because I can see through the matrix. Before I could see through the matrix, I was like, yeah, God bless America, bless the troops, bomb the shit out of them. And I started realizing how things work. I became dangerous. I became unpredictable. I became uncontrollable. See you later, Ledge. Listen to what Hatley says, and I'm going to let this roll completely. I don't want to stop and start it because he's a well-spoken man, and I think he does a great job about how we've advocated our responsibility in the media. If you listen to the intro of my show, which is actually from 2004, that's why I play the old intro. It's when I started to speak out about everything from 9/11 and why are we doing this? Well, I play a piece in there that says media is the lifeblood of a democracy. If it's not functioning well, the democracy can't function. That's from a documentary. I think it was from Outfoxed about how Rupert Murdoch, I'm pretty sure that's what it was from. But listen to what Hatley has to say, and I'll be back in a few.
Yeah, you know what? I think radio does have a responsibility, and we're one of the only shows in America that feels that responsibility to talk about some of these issues. Now, you've got to make this, and you've got to make it entertaining. You've got to mix in some jokes, but there's an overall point to what we do and what we say. I think the other radio personalities in America, almost all of them, have abdicated their responsibilities. They are not holding up their responsibilities. They're not discussing issues that are important with their audience. They're worried about Dancing with the Stars and did Britney Spears show her crotch and is Lindsay Lohan going to jail? And just things that have no bearing on anybody's lives, while there's really important things going on that you could discuss in an entertaining way with your audience and really get into a good conversation with your audience, whereas in radio, people can call in, you can interact with them, you can really get a conversation going, and it's just not done because people concentrate on this pop culture bullshit, and they don't ever concentrate on the important things. And I think that we strike a good balance of being entertaining at the same time talking about some serious issues. And I think the other radio personalities in this country have abdicated that responsibility, which I do think that they have, to inform the public. With a more informed public, I think things would be a lot different. But they are sorely, sorely uninformed, the general public today. We're lucky. Our sponsors really understand that we have a large audience, and they buy our audience. They don't necessarily agree with our opinions, but that's fine. They buy our audience. Now, when you get into the world of cable news, in the Fox or MSNBC or whoever it may be, you can really see that they're not going to be really critical of any industry that's in their what's called in the broadcast industry, their spot block. In that block where all their sponsors are, they're not going to get into anything that criticizes their sponsors. That's how they make their money. They make their endorsements. You know, Glenn Beck has his endorsements, Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity, all of these people, Olbermann, Rachel Maddow, all of them have their sponsors, and they need their sponsors to keep their jobs. So they're not going to do anything that pisses off Pfizer, because you can watch any cable news program and you'll see Pfizer commercials, and they're not going to do anything that pisses them off, because that's a seven-figure buy that the sales manager at NBC or the sales manager at Fox is going to come down the hall and go to Roger Ailes and say, we're losing this much money, and then Roger Ailes is going to go to Bill O'Reilly. He's going to go to Sean Hannity and say, no, you can't do this. You can't be critical of this or that or the other thing. And the point is with O'Reilly is they want to keep him in a box, and he has the tendency to get outside the box sometimes, which is good. But they put him back in that box, and they remind him of the millions of dollars that he makes every year, and they threaten to take that salary away and that great lifestyle that he has away, and he gets right back into the Fox News box. The same with MSNBC. When you saw Keith Olbermann get out of the box, they fired him. When you saw Cenk Uygur get out of the box, they fired him. They told those two guys, we're a mainstream. That was Phil Griffin's quote. We're a mainstream organization. So they figured Keith Olbermann was out of the mainstream, even though he was the highest-rated guy on there. They got rid of him. Cenk Uygur was really punching through with some pretty strong opinions. They got rid of him. Glenn Beck, on the other side, on Fox News, had his own unique perspective. Whether you agree or not, doesn't matter. He was really touting a perspective that you don't hear a lot, and they got rid of him. So I think that sponsors have a lot to do with that, and I think that in TV they have this thing called standards and practices, and I think standards and practices at these big networks are overthinking lawyers, and the overthinking lawyers are what keeps these personalities in their box, and why you don't hear the news stories that you maybe should.
Would you say that, you know, yeah, these lawyers are pretty much dictating what to say on radio, so they're, you know, are they watering down what you say? I mean, you guys are the ones that know what your audience wants, not these guys. And I'm saying this because in medicine it's the same thing, where all these business administrative people are telling the doctors what to prescribe.
Yeah, absolutely. Every broadcast company has lawyers that are in compliance and standards and practices, and those people they do tell you about your content and what you can say and what you can't say, based on what the climate of the FCC is or what the climate of the government is or who might be in office. You know, it changes from administration to administration. There's different hot buttons for everybody. But yes, the lawyers talk to lawyers, talk to you. And the message gets watered down at times. It really does. And we try our best to keep it pure. You know, we get ourselves in trouble. And I think part of the reason we get ourselves in trouble is, you know, we're honest on the air. But most people don't do that. Most people are happy to keep their jobs. They're happy to not rock the boat. And that's usually what goes on in the broadcast media. The good news is the Internet. There's some great bloggers out there. There's some great news websites. There's some great news aggregators that really allow free speech, because they're not worried about these sponsors. And I think that's the beauty of the Internet. And I think that's where the Internet, my hope is in the Internet. And my hope is that the internet crushes cable news. And my hope is that the internet crushes traditional media, and people quit getting their information from the traditional media or the newspaper, and they go to the internet and they really start to find out what the truth is. And there's places on the internet where you can find this stuff. And thankfully, we have that. Imagine if we didn't have the internet, the society would be even more dumbed down than they are now.
I'm going to start calling him Nostradamus. How is that? He's right. Now, remember, that's either, I'm sure that was probably when they were on XM, maybe, or, you know, probably at the peak where they had as many terrestrial stations as possible, and they had a very strong lineup at the time, very strong lineup. But listen to what he said, because, you know, I'm going to bring this full circle, and we're going to end this, and we're going to talk a little drugs versus drugs. The death of terrestrial radio is exactly because of that, because people don't care. I mean, some people care about Kim Kardashian for about 60 seconds. Once they look at her tits, once they look at her ass, moving on. They don't care. Now, the people that only care about that, you're never going to win them with a show like this. That's not my target audience. My target audience is intellect. People that actually think or enjoy thinking or don't mind a good back and forth. But if the old in and out, you know? So that has a lot to do with it. That has a lot to do with that CBS announcement. If your business sucks, it's because of you. It's not because of the listeners. Listening habits have changed. That's because you're feeding them schmaltz. And once you go to the internet and you go to a newspaper or a local radio station and you compare the two, there's no comparison. There's none. Or should I say, there's no fucking comparison. See? That's how you use that word. Make it mean something. You know? And then you just back it up with, you know. That's why you guys are going down. Your revenue should have been up in at least 2009, 2010. But guess what? Your days are numbered, man. The Rebel Alliance. Yeah, baby. So that is, you know, obviously, and I don't wish a death. A lot of people I know that work in terrestrial radio, I still have my toe in it. I don't know if that's going to last long. I don't know. I seriously don't know. But I still enjoy just playing some tunes on a Saturday morning. That's cool. But right now, if they were giving me a choice, well, you can work full time, but you got to give up Dangerous Conversation, I would go, yeah, okay, see you later. Where do I turn in my card key? No thanks. There's no comparison. They're becoming background elevator music. The internet is where it's at. Radio influence is where it's at. And guess what? The talent keeps coming over here. Every time they kick another talented person to the curb, an IT guy, a producer, an on-air personality, whatever it is, guess where they're going? They're going here. The internet, the download, the podcast, because they're not done. I said this, I think, last week. We're not done. Just because you're done with us doesn't mean we're done. And then, believe me, if I was by myself, everybody laugh at me and go, listen to the silly man on the microphone. No. Every single day, another talented person does new media. It's a blog. It's a video blog. A vlog. It's a podcast. It is another of opinion. It is diverse. It might be redneck and stupid. It might be just plain old dumbass dumb, but at least it's given a voice. And I don't mean just for comical reasons. You know, I click on those videos. And I don't know. I just feel smarter. Don't you? Like when you watch a completely dumb fucking ass, don't you feel smart? Or you just go, wow. I should call Einstein, let him know. Coming over to play cards. I love the internet. I love the freedom. I love the idea that tonight I'm going to talk about how Big Pharma is all about money and how nature gave us a whole bunch of different substances that are natural. I'm not saying they're to be abused, but if you use them responsibly and you're an adult, you know what? You got a chance. Got a chance at expanding what you think a reality might be. It might help you, you know, by the way, DMT in the 70s used to be used for couples therapy, or, you know, ecstasy. I'm sorry, MDMA. It used to be used for couples therapy because you got, you know, I'm married 10 years. We can't communicate anymore. She's put up a wall. I've put up a wall. Oh, here, take this magic pill and we'll sit down and talk in an hour. Oh, honey, I wish you could just understand. I still love you a lot, you know, but you just, I feel like you don't know me. You know, it just made you open up. And then it became a party drug. So it has a purpose. And I don't want to keep talking because we're learning that DMT and psilocybin and THC is being used by the U.S. military in test trials to treat PTSD. I kid you not. These substances can have amazing purpose. Now, when you get to DMT and ayahuasca, that's a new level. That's not about getting over the death of someone, but it could be. You know what? I'll say it's probably not taken for that reason, but I don't know each individual person and why they want to trip and what their demons are or what their joys are. So I don't want to say it can't be used that way, but I am saying it's just a whole new level of outside the box. But MDMA, if you've ever done it, and you walk up to someone you haven't seen in 5 years because you had a fight and you haven't spoken to each other and you're both on it, and you walk up and you give each other a huge hug and you just say, I'm sorry and I love you. What the fuck is wrong with that? These things have purpose. And yes, if you watch those documentaries, Illegal Drugs and How They Got That Way, every single drug that started off, you know, like, Wyatt Earp's wife starts with a little Dilaudin, you know, you know, next thing you know, Laudin, whatever they called it. Next thing you know, she OD'd. Opiates, by the way. Started with a little for headaches, and yeah, 2 years later, you're an addict. And it started that way with cocaine. Cocaine used to be in Coca-Cola. Hey, who wants a Coke? Imagine that. Have a Coke and a smile, babe. I'd like to teach the world to sing perfect harmony. I'm going real fast. So everything had a purpose. And yeah, they were abused. And of course they are. And like Joe Rogan says, you can abuse cheeseburgers too, bitch. So don't tell me what I can and can't put in my body. I'm going to play you a little bit more of the audio now from Making a Killing. This kind of shows you the business behind medicine making you feel better. Okay? The intro, you already heard about people saying, you know what? There was a plan in the 50s to numb your mind, dumb you down, make you part of the sheep, not and make you think, certainly keep you from getting angry, because it's angry people that revolt, and revolts become revolutions, and they don't want that. They want you dumb and numb. Check out a little of this audio. This is from a great documentary, by the way. It's called Making a Killing, The Untold Story of Psychotropic Drugs, a psychotropic drugging documentary. Here we go.
Day. Psychotropic drugs cause serious adverse reactions. And while psychiatrists and drug companies fully understand the dangers of the drugs they sell, their unsuspecting customers are left to suffer the consequences.
Everything became worse. Each mood swing was worse.
He would have chronic headaches, chronic, you know, nausea, not feeling good.
She was very agitated.
These are all parents of now deceased people.
Very, very jumpy.
Or sisters.
She was having horrible hallucinations. Her personality was disintegrating.
Once he started on that drug, the cloud just stayed over him and stayed over him and stayed over him. It got darker and darker.
He thought there wasn't anything worth living to kill himself. That was not Matthew. That was the drugs.
At least I would like to have said, I love you. I didn't get a chance to do that.
A lot of suicides here, they're listed.
In addition to crippling scores of people daily, every month, psychiatric drugs kill an estimated 3,000. But the human devastation would never have gotten this high if psychiatrists hadn't worked hand in hand with drug companies to promote their drugs to doctors throughout the world.
Okay, this is where the business comes in. Listen to the relationship between the guy you trust or the woman you trust, the doctor, person that knows you naked, knows, you know, and you're sitting there and telling him I'm depressed or so on or her, and you're thinking, this is a person I can trust. And they get out their little pen and they go, okay, I'm writing you a prescription. I'm going to give you about 20 free pack. You know, they always give you the freebies. What's the difference between that and going on the street and having some guy just give you crack four times in a row, and then the fifth time you got to pay him for? What's the fucking difference? There is none. They're pushers. The only difference is they push in $5,000 suits. That's the only difference.
Today, 70% of all psychiatric drugs are prescribed by general physicians. And how is this accomplished? Marketing.
It's about creating a good story that uses science, that convinces a physician to think about writing a prescription.
This is not science. This is incredibly effective marketing. It has nothing to do with science.
They use what I call statistical control.
All these people are former drug either salespeople or researchers.
Abortionism, basically just skew the numbers, make everything look fantastic, you hide the bad numbers.
They're learning every trick in the book. They're evolving into efficient marketing machines. And it's working.
There's definitely an unholy alliance between psychiatry and pharmaceutical sales. That's a marriage made in heaven.
They're like conjoined twins. They're joined at the wallet.
And with 374 mental disorders filling psychiatry's diagnostic manual and more on the way.
That was the book I was talking about.
Business is booming. Pharmaceutical companies have expanded their roster of psychotropic drugs.
Okay. They're going to start at 1966, and they're going to take you to today. Now, this is a documentary that's 2-3 years old, so there's probably more. But check this out.
From 44 in 1966 to 174 today.
Okay, four times. There are four times as many pills you can take now. So what do they have to do? Now, if you have more drugs, what do you need?
The top five psychotropic drugs combined gross more money than the gross national product of each of over half the countries on Earth.
$18 billion a year. $18 billion a year. That's the gross. Not their net, but it's the gross.
Altogether, the psychiatric industry rakes in $333 billion a year.
Yowza.
How could this have happened? It's a tale of deception that may be difficult to believe, but fatal to ignore.
That's right. I'm a narrator, and I always talk like this to make it seem more serious. I get it. It's a business, ladies and gentlemen. And I want to say this again. This disclaimer is about if they work for you, and you have found a way to cope, and you don't mind not being really low, but not having extreme highs. You're good in the middle, and it works for you, and it helps you, I don't know, be in a relationship or be a parent. You know what? You're an adult. You have the right, and I'll never take that from you. But to sit around and think, oh, there's no side effects, and I'm going to trust that if I just put this magic pill in my mouth, then suddenly everything's going to be okay. Well, guess what?
Bowling for Columbine, we never really came up with the answer in terms of why this happened. I think we did a good job of exposing all the reasons that were given were a bunch of BS. You know, Marilyn Manson caused them to do it. This or that caused them to do it. And none of it really made any sense.
Cause and effect. What do I talk about all the time? People, the news tells you what happened. They don't tell you why it happened. Unless, of course, it's evil Muslims and they're Quran. And they want you dead. There's 70 virgins. Yeah. They don't sit around and go, I wonder why someone would do this. I wonder why there'd be a Timothy McVeigh, by the way, Patsy. I wonder why there'd be a Colorado shooting in the movie theater. Maybe a Patsy. And then you look at the pictures of these people, and they are wigged the fuck out. They are on something, or worse, decided to come off it.
That's why I believe there should be an investigation in terms of what prescribed pharmaceuticals, these kids were on. And perhaps parents, it would have a shocking, it would be shocking, I think, to the millions of parents who prescribe this for their kids if they if it was finally explained to them, if this is the case, that this perhaps occurred for no other reason other than because of these prescriptions.
What creates the shooter? Ozzy Records? There's something going on in that brain chemistry. Now, there are psychotic people. There are people who tend to be violent. But these are mostly middle of the road. And if you notice, a lot of them are white, middle class. Mom and dad can afford that pill. And they can't deal with you going through puberty. They can't deal with you dealing with the breakup of your first love in your life. And you're depressed all the time. And you're wearing black. And you want to get a tattoo. And they're like, oh, something's wrong with Junior. Give him a pill. And then, oh, I don't understand why he shot up a movie theater. Cause and effect.
Imagine what that would do. Imagine how people would totally rethink things, grasping for every little straw they can to explain why something like Columbine happens, when in fact it may be nothing more than this.
Psychotropic drugs, either being on it and it's the wrong mix, because by the way, they usually put you on one and what does it give you? It gives you side effects. Well, what do? They give you a second one to deal with the side effects of the first one. What does the second one have? It has side effects. What do? Let's get a third pill in this kid. And it's like this, it's a toxic cocktail of chemicals dealing with the most important organ in your body. Your fucking brain. Let's let Mr. Moore finish out. And then what we're going to do... Oh, yeah, you know what? I got some audio from Tim Robbins. Tim Robbins, about drugging children. It's only about 90 seconds long. I want to make sure I play that, and that'll go good back-to-back with this here. Let's let Mr. Moore go for it. It's about another 90 seconds.
How else do you explain two otherwise decent kids, very smart, no history of violence to other kids in the school? Why them? Why did this happen? It's an extremely legitimate question to pose, and it demands an investigation. The Eli Lilly Corporation, a pharmaceutical company, for nearly 15 years covered up their own internal investigation that showed that anyone on Prozac is 12 times more likely to attempt suicide than those using other antidepressants.
I got to stop it. You do realize that the whole reason you bring Junior in there in the first place is because he goes, I don't want to live. I'm too sad. His girlfriend broke his heart. It's life. It happens. So now you give him this shit that fucks with him so bad, he really wants to kill himself. You create a Frankenstein.
12 times more than the average population, 12 times more than those using...
Hang on a second.
Is 12 times more likely to attempt suicide than...
Well, if you're going to kill yourself, what do? You go out in a blaze of glory. Well, if I'm going to die, I'm only 18, 22, 25. You know what I'll do? I'll kill a bunch of people. I'll get death by cop. I'll be famous forever. And I won't be sad anymore. Or I won't be suicidal. 12 times more nor... Okay, suicide, I'm not making fun of suicide here. And people, there are people that have the quick suicidal thought, oh, I'm tired of living, life sucks. And then the ones that really are starting to contemplate it. And then there's the plea for attention. There's lots of different versions of that word when you hear it from people. Most of the ones that commit suicide, by the way, don't even talk about it. But people close to them realize they're going through something. That's normal. That's the normal curve we're talking about. Now you get them on this shit, and they're 12 times more likely to off themselves, or others, or both.
More likely to attempt suicide than those using other antidepressants. Not 12 times more than the average population. 12 times more than those already on other antidepressants. This is a criminal act. And I want to know why These criminals are still walking the streets.
Says, if every school shooter in the last 20 years had been taking bath salts, would you want to examine the link? Think about it now. What if, for some reason, they all took mushrooms, or they all took LSD, or they all took something else that was what I consider a little bit more of the, well, LSD isn't a natural substance, so but psilocybin and mushrooms are. And then they killed a bunch of people? Don't you think it'd be on the news all the time? We're starting to do some research into what caused the shooting. Never mind how people died and the ribbons and the flowers and the shit you see every single time. Nobody asks what caused this person to do this. And if you think Sandy Hook is real, I think it's questionable at best. And I don't think that little kid could carry the guns they said he did. So that's a separate story. But what caused Dylan Avery? Not Dylan Avery. Dylan Avery was one of the guys that made Loose Change. Sorry. What caused the Sandy Hook shooter, if you believe the story? I got a lot of issues with it. I'll be honest with you. I really do. But if it was, oh, he was doing mushrooms the day before. Oh, well, now it's all over the, ooh, you know, we're going to stamp out mushrooms, the war on mushrooms. But no, it's these wonderful drugs that you see in the middle of a golf. You, by the way, watch the Sweet 16. Watch the basketball tourney. Watch a golf tournament. Watch Middle America White People Programming. And tell me you don't at least see one ad, if not hundreds. The National Institute of Health reported antidepressants and violence, problems at the interface of medicine and law states. Quote, these cases need urgent examination. And by the way, when I say nobody talks about it, I have heard it mentioned in media occasionally. Okay? I have heard the anchor person, but very rarely will you hear anybody on television say, gee, I wonder if that shooter was on antidepressants. Think about that. Because that's their food chain. That's what Hatley was talking about. You don't criticize a sponsor. Even if the sponsor's product creates mass shootings. How fucked up is that? Damn, that's screwed up. That was Michael Moore. And I'm not talking political Michael Moore, leaning left Michael Moore. I'm talking about an issue that we need to talk about. This is your brain on drugs. Remember those? This is your brain with a side order of bacon. Buttered toast. Remember all that propaganda? Oh, guess what your brain on drugs looks like now? Pew, pew, pew. Sorry, I didn't have my sound effects up. Let me see if I can find it real quick. I doubt I can, but, you know, if I can, I will. I'm stalling. Can you tell I'm stalling? Yes, you can tell. This is your brain on drugs. This is your brain on Paxil. Where are those out? Where are those commercials? How come we're not seeing those? All right, we're going to do a Carlin's Corner. And by the way, George, Tim Robbins, we're going to go into the break with Tim Robbins here. And Tim only talks for about 90 seconds of the worst of the worst. Drugging children. I'm not here to tell you what to do with your children, how to raise them, what moral is, what religion. You know what? You made them, you raise them. But I am here to question whether you should give an 8-year-old shy kid medicine so he's not shy. Here's an idea. Let him go socialize, because here's what'll happen. He'll make friends. Some people will make fun of him. Some people might even bully him. And then he'll find a couple people he can relate with. And he won't be as shy. And then when he's 10, he won't be as shy. You grow out of this stuff. How many people are shy in their 40s? Not many. You can't be. You've got to communicate with other people. You got to make eye contact. You have to learn to not be shy. You have to learn to communicate. And what do they call it now? Social anxiety. And there's millions and millions of people taking pills for it. I've got social anxiety. Now you're shy. Drugging kids. We'll take us into the break. I will lighten the load, though Carlin does talk about kids. Remember, Carlin probably only believed half of what he told you, but he was so great when he was just picking on everybody. Well, this time around, he's going to pick on parents and their kids. That'll be Carlin's Corner. And since we are talking God's natural, the universe's natural gift to us, which is the substances that grow from the ground, I think I would do myself and this show a disservice if I didn't play a little Ganja Green. Love that track. So here's Tim Robbins. We'll do a tune. We'll do a Carlin's Corner, and we'll come on back with the last 45 minutes of Dangerous Conversation right here at Radio Influence.
And the big problem I have is when they medicate teenagers and children. Oftentimes at the request of the expert opinion of some fucking teacher that is having a hard time with a creative child, essentially. And my fear there is we're medicating all of the future artists and rock and rollers, and you're not going to see that burning rage that you need to see in the art. It's just going to be medicated. Now, when you medicate a kid through those years, that kid's not learning how to deal with depression or anger. The discomfort that the child's depression and anger brings the parent or the teacher, the idea that they would medicate him, it's really a selfish thing. It's really the teacher's problem and the parent's problem. So what they wind up doing is medicating these kids. And then the kids find their way, of course, like other teenagers, into self-medication along with that medication. And that's a recipe for disaster. And all of these shooters in Columbine and that Kip Kinkle up in Oregon and that kid down south were all on antidepressants throughout their teenage years. And what happened was they got to a point where the rage just blew. You kids got a lot of energy. Find something to do with the energy. Get off your ass, Mom, Dad, and do something rather than just put a pill into their mouth.
Nighttime out on the ledge.
Sure, let's have a little bit of this. I get the big Bob Marley joint. Look at this. Here, try this.
Ledger.
That's what you are. You are the motherfucking Antichrist.
DC, Dangerous Conversation.
I tried every fucking thing I could fucking think of to mold him into a proper kind of DJ.
Ledgy Poo.
I'm smoking on the ganja green. Do you want to get high with me? I got nothing but that high-grade weed, mad cheese and a couple of teas. Listen, Ma, can I smoke with you? It's your choice, I got purple too. Let's get going, let us smoke some juice. Pop, 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 this is how we do.
My nigga roll that crit, light that shit. Green smoke, nothing but the best that's fit. I got purple lips from this blunt I hit. Off the secondhand smoke, I could get you lit. Blow perk by the pound, goose by the gallon. Blunt rap filled with haze from the Allen. I got high time weed, no stem, no seed. That shit when you smoke make a nigga eyes bleed. If you buff like me, you run through OZs. If you copping me a blunt, make sure it's Dutch cheese. Cognac preferred, blowing on the herb. Calm a nigga nerves from blasting on your herbs. I smoke well, I smoke good in the hood. Bring a couple pounds back to the woods. You know, breathe, man, I'm in and I'm out. Rep the 16, nigga, with a blunt in my mouth. Holla.
I'm smoking on that ganja green. Do you wanna get high with me? I got nothing but that high-grade weed, mad cheese and a couple of teas. Listen, Ma, can I smoke with you? It's your choice, I got purple too. Let's get going like we're supposed to do. Puff, 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 this is how we do.
look in the sky, it's a bird, it's a plane. The eye click blowing dro out the jaw pain. I'm so high in the sky, you can call me Kelly. And the weed fire here, you can call that Nelly. I'm in the hood, boy, like Section 8. Blowing good, plus your boy push plenty away. This might steal my fate, but I keep that green. Pants hanging real low, cause I tote that thing. Cause I'm high up on my tiptoes, man, only Lord knows. Your boy Rob is on a block blowing plenty dro. As a matter of fact, I'm rolling up some purple. Another day for your boy, you know how I roll. Big money, big stacks, man, plenty weed. Fuck that mid grade, no sticks, no seeds. Cause I ain't stopping till a brother lungs smoked out. I click in this bitch, boy, no doubt.
I'm smoking on the ganja green. Do you wanna get high with me? I got nothing but that high grade weed, mad duck cheese and a couple of C's. Listen, ma, can I smoke with you? It's your choice, I got purple too. Let's get on like we're supposed to do. Puff, 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 this is how we do.
The type of cats keep a good smoke. What you hood for? And I'ma come through, show you what you should blow. I got that good shit, my swag so airponic. Wanna see me, dog, but everybody want it. Just jumped out a bag of the good smoke. Now they like, what's up? Do what it look for. I get good drunk and a good kush. Smell so stank, it need a good dush. One more sack of the purple, feeling woozy. Niggas talking crazy, but these hoes trying to use me. I'm so fly, I'm so high. I done lost my keys and no lie. 10 pounds of bubble kush, get me a new whip. I'm laid back smoking out in a spaceship. That'd be a great whip, I got a great jab. Mad at them boys, dog, cause we move a great lab.
I got lungs full of smoke, that good green dope. That kush, girl, we so fly that we float. We poop that piff, God's gift to the earth. Yo, bless yourself, catch a whiff of this curve. I know you wanna hit when the spliff get lit. Light an incense, but you can still smell that shit. Soon as you get it whiff, you can tell that's it. Pineapple Express, it's a movie about this. Fat newbies, we twist, blowing with the eye click. I split the Midwest, high on some shy shit. With the seeds way up, rolling bees up stuff. Take a slow puffs, girl, this to get you fucked up. Yeah, I got that stuff, and it's stuffed in a jar. And it's guaranteed high, cause you puffin' with a star. Yeah, I'm TCO, from the individuals. And I blow that dro by the truckload, yo.
I'm smoking on that ganja green. Do you wanna get high with me? I got nothing but that high grade weed, mad duck cheese and a couple of C's. Listen, ma, can I smoke with you? It's your choice, I got purple too. Let's get on like we're supposed to do. Puff, 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 this is how we do.
Whoa, 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 man. You're getting crazy now.
Scott Ledger.
That wordsmith who will whisper all the wonders of the world.
Are you the little guy making all that big noise?
I'll tell you the truth. I don't really feature listening to a replay of last night. You know, it's kind of depressing.
Dangerous conversation.
Thank you. Now, I appreciate it. Something else I'm getting tired of is all this stupid bullshit we have to listen to all the time about children. It's all you hear in this country. Children. Help the children. What about the children? Save the children. You know what I say? Fuck the children. Fuck them. They're getting entirely too much attention. And I know what you're thinking. You say, Jesus, he's not going to attack children, is he? Yes, he is. He's going to attack children. And remember, this is Mr. Conductor talking. I know what I'm talking about. I know what I'm talking about. And I also know all you single dads and soccer moms who think you're such fucking heroes aren't gonna like this, but somebody's gotta tell you for your own good, your children are overrated and overvalued. You've turned them into little cult objects. You have a child fetish, and it's not healthy. And don't give me that weak shit. Well, I love my children. Fuck you. Everybody loves their children. Doesn't make you special. John Wayne Gacy loved his children. Kept them all right out in the yard near the garage. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is this constant mindless yammering in the media, this neurotic fixation that somehow everything has to be revolved around children. It's completely out of balance. Listen. There are a couple of things about kids you have to remember. First of all, they're not all cute, okay? In fact, if you look at them close, some of them are rather unpleasant looking. And a lot of them don't smell too good either. The little ones in particular seem to have a kind of urine and sour milk combination or something. Stay with me on this. The longer you, sooner you face it, the better off you're going to be. Second premise, not all children are smart and clever. Got that? Kids are like any other group of people. A few winners, a whole lot of losers. There are a lot of loser kids out there who simply aren't going anywhere. And you can't save them all. You can't save them all. You got to let them go. You got to cut them loose. You got to stop overprotecting them because you're making them too soft. Today's kids are way too soft. For one thing, there's too much emphasis on safety. Child-proof medicine bottles and fireproof pajamas, child restraints and car seats and helmets, bicycles, skateboard, baseball helmets. Kids have to wear helmets now for everything but jerking off. Grown-ups have taken all the fun out of being a kid just to save a few thousand lives. It's pathetic. It's pathetic. What's happening is... All right, what's happening? You know what it is? These baby boomers, these soft, fruity baby boomers, are raising an entire generation of soft, fruity kids who aren't even allowed to have hazardous toys, for Christ's sakes. Hazardous toys. Shit, whatever happened to natural selection? Survival of the fittest. The kid who swallows too many marbles doesn't grow up to have kids of his own. Simple as that. Simple. Nature. Nature. Nature knows best. We're saving entirely too many lives in this country of all ages. Nature should be allowed to do its job of killing off the weak and sickly and ignorant people without interference from airbags and batting helmets. Just think of it as passive eugenics, okay? Now, here's another example of overprotection. Did you ever notice on the TV news, every time some guy with an AK-47 strolls onto a schoolyard and kills three or four kids and a couple of teachers, the next day, the school is overrun with counselors and psychiatrists and grief counselors and trauma therapists trying to help the children cope. Shit, when I was in school, someone came to our school and killed three or four of us, we went right on with our arithmetic. 35 classmates minus 4 equals 31. We were tough. We were tough. I say if kids can handle the violence at home, they ought to be able to handle the violence in school. I'm not worried about guns in school. You know what I'm waiting for? Guns in church. That's going to be a lot of fun. And it'll happen. You watch. Some nut will go fucking ape shit in the church. And they'll refer to him as a disgruntled worshiper. Here's another bunch of ignorant shit. School uniforms. Bad theory. The idea that if kids wear uniforms to school, it helps keep order. Don't these schools do enough damage making all these kids think alike? Now they're going to get them to look alike, too? And it's not a new idea. I first saw it in old newsreels from the 1930s, but it was hard to understand because the narration was in German. One more. Thank you. Thank you. One more item about children, and that is this superstitious nonsense that blames tobacco companies for kids who smoke. Listen, kids don't smoke because a camel in sunglasses tells them to. They smoke for the same reasons adults do, because it relieves anxiety and depression. And you'd be anxious and depressed, too, if you had to put up with these pathetic, insecure, striving, anal, yuppie parents who enroll you in college before you're old enough to know which side of the playpen smells the worst. And then they fill you full of Ritalin and drag you all over town in search of meaningless structure. Little League, Cub Scouts, swimming, soccer, karate, piano, bagpipes, watercolors, witchcraft, glass blowing, and dildo practice. They even have play dates, for Christ's sakes. Playing is now done by appointment. Whatever happened to you show me your wee-wee and I'll show you mine. Hey, no wonder kids smoke. It helps. Not as much as weed, but hey. You can't have everything. You know it's true. Parents are burning these kids out on structure. I think every day all children should have 3 hours of daydreaming. Just daydreaming. That, you could use a little of it yourself, by the way. Just sit at the window, stare at the clouds. It's good for you. If you want to know how you can help your children, leave them the fuck alone.
Here's Ledge.
Some of you know me as Mikey Gaga. Some of you know me as Billy Bimbats.
He's crazy, he's a fool, but he's not a liar.
This is not a conversation for children.
Look, I don't think you're crazy. I know you're not a terrorist. I know you're just an ordinary guy who's popped his top. But you must connect with those people out there.
Dangerous conversation.
Dangerous conversation right here at RadioInfluence.com. I'm Scott Legend. What the fuck's going on? Hello, internets. Can you hear me? Carlin's Corner. You know, again, if you're not familiar with George Carlin, you go, wow, that guy hates kids. No. But man, was that guy a genius or what? Not just a great writer. He often talked, and the reason I do Carlin's Corners isn't just because, you know, I play Bill Hicks and I play Stanhope and I play that mold of comedian, because they found a way to say things of substance and still entertain you. That is the key. If you listen to the Hatley video audio I played you, he says, we find a way to talk about things of substance, but we know to keep it entertaining. In other words, you got to throw in a fart once in a while. Oh, son of a... Okay, you know, here's what I do for a living. Okay, I do radio. But in this show, I have to run my own board, as they say. So I have to push all the buttons, and I'm the host. Normally, there's a producer that does all that stuff, but I don't get to do that. Except, well, this is my favorite part. That's my favorite. Just so you know. If you're scoring at home, that's my favorite. Yeah, Carlin's Corner, you know, Bill Hicks, you know, Carlin, the masters of thought-provoking content, especially when you talk about Bill Hicks and drug references. Again, a man who did his own thing, discovered the substances himself, and came up with his own goddamn opinion about it, which he should have. That's why I love the internet. And that's why we're gonna play at least one video from Reset.me, which is Amber Lyon. And we will get to some Joe Rogan talking about DMT. Why? Because Joe Rogan doesn't just talk about drugs like, yeah, I heard a friend of mine did some LSD. No, Joe Rogan's, I did it. Here's how I felt. These are the things I thought. Here's what I came away with. My body, I make the choice. And yes, I trust DMT's in almost everything, by the way. It's in plants and proteins. Our body synthesizes it. And essentially what ayahuasca is, here's how it works. If you eat grass has DMT, regular grass, lawn clippings, you're going to have a viral video. But what happens is the DMT doesn't get assimilated by your digestive system because of enzymes that break it down, and it's in there, but you don't get it. So what is ayahuasca? Ayahuasca is a root that the people of the Amazon belt, I guess you can say, discovered. So when they took the regular leaf substance and then they mixed it with the root, your body doesn't kill those DMT enzymes. It assimilates them. So basically, you combine two different forces of nature together inside of you. And yes, and I haven't done it, by the way. I plan on doing it, but I plan on doing it more ceremonial, quiet, you know, trying to figure out what's going on in my world. If, you know, I don't know what to expect, but I'm not afraid of it because I've done other substances. Now, I have a brother who I love very much, and I know he loves me, but he hasn't talked to me in 3 years. because I told him I've done these things. That's the family I'm from, by the way. Just so you think, oh, Ledge's parents must have been real hip and cool. No. What is Catholic squared? Like Catholic times Catholic? That's my family. And I decided, you know what? I'm tired of other people telling me, don't do this, stop that. I grew up in such a disciplined structure, though I had plenty of playtime because that's my mom would go, get out of the house, you're driving me crazy. And I'd run around and I got nature's drug, endorphins. But as I aged and I got into high school, I said, hey, you know, this is Vietnam time, late 60s, early 70s. And I'm hearing about all these people smoking weed and what's it about. And I see all these peace protests. I decided this, I don't know, try it myself. And guess what? I liked it. Are you throwing up over there? She ate a lot of grass. Oh, how's that for irony? My dog was eating a lot of grass today. And she's going to barf it up sometime tonight. We should do the barf countdown. How's that for irony? Man, we could get a bell. There we go. So I decided for myself. Well, Joe Rogan's the same way. That's why I respect him. It's not because he did the substance and he's trying to be cool. He did it because he said to himself, you know what? I'm going to discover for myself what this substance is about. And he did it as an adult. He chose to do it. And I'm sure he knew exactly what he was getting. And he definitely knew who he was getting it from. And he decided to make up his own fucking mind about it. I still go back and forth with people in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. Oh, you just want to escape reality. No, I don't. I want to question reality. There's a big difference when I want the goddamn choice to do it. You already own my property. You already own everything else. You don't own my body, and you definitely don't own my mind. So guess what? Fuck you. I'm going to do it. And I'm not just doing it. Out of spite, I'm doing it because it is a journey and it is a ride and you're supposed to, I'm not telling you to do it. I have many of my friends who have never done a drug and they're happy and I'm like, good for you, man. And they'll look at me like, you know, every once in a while you get that, gee, what's he know I don't? What was his experience that I haven't had? I don't know. Try it. Oh, no. Most of the people I know in my personal life that don't do it are control freaks. And I don't mean that in an evil, bad way. I just mean they absolutely do not like letting go of control. And if you do a substance as powerful as what Joe Rogan's going to talk about here in a second, if you do that substance, you guess what? You're driving the bus, right? Okay? And what you're doing is bus is going straight down the road. You do the substance, get up out of the driver's seat, stick a brick on the gas pedal, and go sit in the back. Because you have no control. So people that are a little bit less likely to do those things lean that way. And I didn't realize it until I started going, okay, he doesn't do it. He doesn't do it. She doesn't. Oh, what is the common denominator here? Fear of losing control. I'm not here to tell you to do anything. I'm here to tell you about the people that have done it. And now want to testify, and this shit just doesn't get on mainstream media. Wait till you hear the closing audio of a cancer. This woman's dying of cancer, okay? There's no magic cure her way. And by the way, good old cannabis. Look for a cancer cure within the next, I'd say, 5 to 10 years. And it's just a heartfelt, eye-opening, beautiful experience that person shares, and if I don't shut the fuck up, we won't get to it. So here, a little bit Joe Rogan, as he talks about DMT, the name of this is DMT Changes Everything.
Of course he does.
What DMT is, it's a human neurotransmitter. It's the most powerful psychedelic known to man. Your own brain produces it. It's actually responsible for dreaming. When you're in heavy REM sleep and right at times of extreme stress when your body thinks it's going to die, that's when your brain pumps out the most DMT. And it's responsible for near-death experiences, UFO abductions, all that stuff. And I've done it about 7 times. It's pretty intense.
I like that. Ballpark figure. You see, if you go, I've done it once, or I've done it 3 times. And when he goes, I've done it about 7 times. What's the wiggle room there? Because with guys, remember now, we always multiply. You feel like how many chicks you slept with? And the guy goes, yeah, I slept with 48. You know what? Any time a guy says he slept with a certain amount of people, divide it by three, and that's the reality. Okay? Women's the opposite. Women. Women say they slept with seven guys, multiply it by three. Joe's like, 6-7 times.
That's a near death, right, man?
Well, yeah, near death experiences, and it's responsible for UFO abduction experiences because the idea is that an endogenous dump of DMT is that it's stored in a pineal gland, and the pineal gland
is the third eye, the pine cone.
The gland is literally your third eye. It's exactly where the third eye is in Eastern mysticism, like right between the two eyebrows. And it actually has a retina and a cornea and a lens in reptiles. And it produces DMT. And DMT, even though it's the most powerful psychedelic drug known to man, it's in every single ecosystem all over the world.
That's what I was talking about. It's everywhere. Oh, by the way, what calcifies your pineal gland? In other words, what kills it slowly? Fluoride. That's a side note.
It exists in plants and grasses, and it's everywhere. I mean, it's really the craziest drug to be illegal everywhere because everyone's got it in their system. It's like everyone's holding. That was like Terrence McKenna's line. Yeah, and it's a pretty intense stuff, man. If you do it, you will talk to intelligent beings from other dimensions, for real. I mean, it sounds crazy. You would think that if there's something like that, that it would be on the front page. It's amazing that people don't know about it. I mean, it's the most incredible experience. I mean, we are such... an experience-obsessed society. I mean, everybody wants to go whitewater rafting, and people want to talk about, you know, my uncle climbed Mount Everest. All about experiences. We all want to ride roller coasters and see the craziest movies. There is a little powder, and you smoke this little powder, and it will change the way you look at everything. You won't care about UFOs. If a UFO landed right out there, I'd be like, wow, yeah, they're probably from another planet. Whatever. It's not DMT. DMT is 100,000 times crazier than that. It's like mushrooms times a million plus aliens.
You know, I like people without fear. People that are courageous enough to carve their own path. People follow courage. It's a line from Braveheart. They really do. People follow courage. That's what they're, you know, and Joe Rogan could have easily just said, I'll be an actor. I'll do Fear Factor forever. I'll do my stand-up comedy. He said, no, I'm going to share my life with you. I'm going to share what I've done. And, you know, he says, is it responsible for near-death experiences? I would say that it's the scientific explanation, but I'd argue the fact that it creates the NDE. And if I'm, by the way, bucket list, Joe Rogan, either on my show or somehow this podcast gets big enough and I end up on his. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I think I just made myself come. Wow. Now, anybody who's listened to DC knows that you know, he's one of my few man crushes. I admire the man, his intellect, his open-mindedness. He still has his own opinions, but he's willing to listen. That's why his podcast is so popular. I'll let this roll for about another two.
That's what it's like. And literally, I mean, it's crazier than you could possibly imagine or describe. If you take DMT, you will communicate with something. And it's so beyond description that me talking about it is like trying to explain a kaleidoscope to a blind man. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. Like, there's no way you could explain it. I mean, it's so beyond anything you can explain. But something communicates with you when you do this stuff. And my words do it no justice.
You take it on a plane?
No. It's not something, it's not recreational. And it's not something you can take on a plane because you have to smoke it. You know, and you wouldn't want to be around people and noises or anything. You'd want to be in total darkness,
desert, or
silence, and you want to just experience that.
Can you have bad trips on DMT?
Sure. You can have bad trips in anything, but bad trips are usually you trying to resist and your ego trying to control the situation and you realizing what a piece of poo you really are. You know, like your ego protects you from a lot of your, you know, terrible behavior and, you know, it justifies a lot of things you do. But man, when mushrooms or DMT or anything that removes the ego, it just shows you what your life is really like and who you really are. That's where the bad trips come from.
That's also the reason they don't want you doing it. When I say they, I mean the state. Because you might heal. You might deal with some demons. You might get a little bit more homeostasis, a little bit more balance in your life. And you might not think that killing people 8,000 miles away is just fucking hunky-dory. You might feel more connected to everything, and that includes them. That's what Bill Hicks talked about. This is why these substances are illegal. Alcohol is great. They want you getting fucked up and thrown in jail. They make their money, and they keep their society dumb. Don't get me wrong, I like my booze, but at the same time, it does stimulate a different part of the brain. It brings out a different part of the personality. But it's perfectly legal. Microbreweries are popping up. Big-time New York money's buying micro... You know, alcohol is here to stay. But nobody wants to tell you what... Nobody wants to be told what they can put in your body. And that's why prohibition with alcohol didn't work. By the way, it also... What did it do? It created a black market. It created Dillinger and all the booze runners and all the million-dollar gangs. You don't want things to be illegal. You want them to be legal because, A, you know it's what it is. You know the percentage. You know, but don't get me wrong. I get it. You know, I'm not a big fan of everything being controlled and taxed. But I would rather all these substances be legal and taxed. By the way, an amazing revenue stream. Because, A, it puts all the black market people out of work. It ends the violence. The police force that is supposed to be there for good can actually, I don't know, go catch rapists and murderers and do good things. The idea of legalizing drugs is a win-win-win-win all the way down. And this is what cannabis is, the legalization of cannabis is going to show us. Now, I'm not saying that suddenly you're going to be able to go, hey, happy hour, they're having a deal on coke, man. I'm not saying that you're going to get to everything's legal and everywhere, but the more choices you have, and if you're stupid and you're dumb and you take too much of a substance that can kill you, well, welcome to the Darwin Awards, fucker. That's how it works. But don't tell me that I can't have it because you're an asshole and an idiot. Well, DMT is in, that's what ayahuasca is. Now, he's talking about smoking it, and I haven't smoked it, but I understand it's about a 5-minute rocket ride. Ayahuasca, 5-hour gentle ride, or at least eases you in, eases you out. Again, what I've been told. So I can't sit here and describe those experiences yet. I can tell you what MDMA feels like. I can tell you what LSD feels like. I can tell you what cannabis feels like. I can tell you what psilocybin feels like. Because I decided to decide for myself, you know what? Fuck off. I'm going to do it. I'm sick of being afraid of everything. And it created the Frankenstein that's now on the microphone. All right, a couple more seconds, Joe.
Trips don't come from happy people with wonderful lives or loving families or nice to everybody. Bad trips come from people who are doing bad things or they're insecure. Or they have real bad problems in their past that they're squashing and they're not dealing with. And then it just, wham, just comes right up to the surface. These things, it's like if you've had enough of these experiences, you know, well, what is life? Well, life should be a bunch of positive experiences. It should be a lot of fun, you know? So that's what comedy is. I mean, comedy is like spreading fun. It's spreading love, spreading happiness. You know, you go on stage and everybody has a good time. You say, thanks for coming out. Everybody cheers. You have fun. It's a positive experience, you know, and that's all you have in life, really, is positive experiences with your girlfriend, your family, yeah, your friends, your buddies. That's really all life is.
You know what sucks? We're lucky enough to, you know, have a life, you know, and you'll live your whole life not knowing anything.
Yeah.
When it comes down to, like, looking up at the stars, like, what is all that? Is there other life forms? Is there other things just around you? Yeah, we never will get the answers to any of that stuff.
That's the craziest thing about DMT, because DMT is literally like having a meeting with God. It's like having a meeting with divine, unbelievably wise, incredibly loving energy, like whatever it is, the source of everything. And
I think it will stop it there. Again, he's talking about his experience. And did you hear? He said the same thing I said about a bad trip. A bad trip means you got shit to deal with. There might be heads buried in your basement. Suddenly, you know what I'm saying? All right, the last piece of audio tonight is, it runs about 9 hours. I don't think we're going to be able to play the whole piece of it, but I definitely want to get to it. This is a beautiful story. Just a little backstory real quick. This is from AmberLyonsReset.me. People in this country don't talk about death. This is a neuropsychologist. Her name is Annie Levy, as she says in a video below, who suffers from ovarian cancer. I don't understand why I can't see all the words. She says, it's like one of those things where it's too big for the screen. She has lost her faith due to anxiety. Well, and pain and ongoing medical procedures contributed to her misery, and irritability was affecting her relationship with her husband. This is a woman with ovarian cancer. Instead of dealing with the death openly, she found people she was interacted with clung to optimism to the point of denial instead of dealing with the realities. She wasn't willing to ignore the possibility of death, and she signed up for a psilocybin study to help her confront her mortality, at least from the spectrum, of course, at least from my perspective anyway. My intention was to learn to control my anxiety so I could enjoy the rest of my life. Then they administered psilocybin as a treatment for serious mental suffering. That's Dr. Charles Grobe, the professor at Harbor, that would be UCLA Medical Center, says. Grobe and a team of researchers conducted a pilot study to see if psilocybin could help ease anxiety in patients with advanced stage cancer. In other words, hello, it's Mr. Death. I'm here for you. Monty Python, Brad Pitt. How many people have played Death? Kids in the Hall just did an 8-part miniseries, by the way, on that as well. It's pretty cool. All right, let's listen to some of this video. Okay, here we go. Good old YouTube. Come on. Rock me,
people,
baby.
People in this country don't talk about death. It, like, when I would talk about it sometimes with people, they would go, oh, be optimistic. You know, don't talk that way. You're going to be fine. And you really need to look at it. And this is the perfect way to do it.
Her psilocybin therapy, is it what it says?
Once you have an illness diagnosed that's terminal, it really changes your viewpoint.
Specifically with the cancer study, we're administering psilocybin as a treatment for serious mental suffering. Certainly, individuals with advanced cancer often have significant levels of existential anxiety.
Yeah, of course. No, I don't care what your belief is, you know, as in a religion. I don't care if you're kind of like me where I do feel connected to something larger. In my mind and heart, I know it's there, but I can't tell you what it is. I can't tell you what the purpose behind it is. I can only tell you it took me 10 years of reading and just looking outside of the traditional religions, and I found it. But guess what? If I get a terminal disease, even though I'm pretty darn sure there's something amazing going on after I die, you don't think that when I'm a few months or a few weeks away from ending this existence, you don't think I'm not going to have anxiety? I watched my sister in her bed, and you know what? Hospice gave her a lot of morphine, and I don't know how much of it was for pain, but I'll tell you what. It probably had the same effect on her as this study does with these cancer patients.
I had lost my faith because of anxiety, and I was just terrified. I was so anxious that it was hard to think about anything else. I didn't think I was so worried about death, but I was worried about the process of dying, about suffering and being in pain and having all kinds of horrible medical procedures. I was being irritable with my husband, Richard, when I was so anxious. And that was a very bad thing. Because he's my caretaker, you know, when I'm ill. And I was not being nice to him and treating him the way I should at all.
Okay, enough of the sound effects. And
she was irritable, and we were both stressed out. I'm not saying it was her fault. The dynamic of the interaction between us often led to quarreling.
We talked about my intention, and my intention was to learn to control my anxiety so I could enjoy the rest of my life, because I was not enjoying my life at all.
I'm there with the subject for the entire 6 hours. We take a standard hospital room, and my research coordinator fixes it up with wall hangings and fabric, so we really create a nice setting, and patients are kind of cocooned.
Lovely purple wall hangings, and they brought orchids. I was thrilled with that. And then I had one of my tonkas, my favorite tonka, right at the foot of my bed.
And I advise them to go as deeply as possible into the experience.
as soon as it started working, I knew I had nothing to be afraid of because it connected me with the universe. It was very gentle, and there were people right there if I got upset. Everything looked absolutely beautiful. I didn't see things that weren't there. With my eyes covered, I saw patterns and visions and sort of faces and things. I thought about being involved with people I love, and I thought about things I would do with each one of them and things I would tell them. I had an amazing spiritual experience, so it reconnected me to the universe.
I know people say those things, and for anyone who's never done anything and felt that, it's like you are already home. You're in it. You just don't realize it. You feel so separated from it, God, universe, whatever. That's the illusion, by the way, being so effective. This melts the illusion. That's the best way I could describe it. It doesn't connect you to something. It shows you you already are connected to it. And that's what she's describing.
One of the CDs I brought, which was the Gyuto Monks, on psilocybin, I just felt like I was with these monks, and they were giving me teachings and teaching me how to relax my body and to have faith. I was lying on this hospital bed, and it felt like the bed had turned into a circle of hands that were holding me up, and I was being supported. A Christian person would probably experience being supported by Jesus or God.
It's another beautiful part of this. Kind of like the near-death experience, if you were raised a certain, you know, a lot of people raised a Christian or Catholic or whatever, if they have a near-death experience, they do describe Jesus. That's already in your subconscious. So maybe your subconscious and your conscious are now partying together, and this substance is melting away that wall. So when you start to feel connected or supported, as she says, being a Buddhist, like she says, that's her play that plays out for her versus like what she just said about someone else who might be a Christian. Lots of Christian imagery they're showing right now. Lots of it.
Yep. They put on Ave Maria, and for some reason that made me cry about what effect my death is going to have on my granddaughter. And they all came over, and they just sort of put their hands on top of my hands. Very, didn't say anything, but they were just there. And it was very comforting.
Every hour, we check in, see how they're doing.
I had to get up and go to the bathroom, and when I was washing my hands, I looked in the mirror. I used to have very long, curly hair, and people thought I was so much younger than I was, and I was... Now I look my age, you know, at least. So I went back into the room and talked to them about that. I sort of came to the conclusion that, well, yes, I look older, but with age comes wisdom and maturity, and I felt okay with it.
When we came back, it was like someone had put on a light bulb inside of Annie's head.
Her husband.
She was literally glowing.
Also, for our cancer study, we're looking at the impact of our treatment on their overall quality of life.
After that session, Richard and I went to Hawaii, and we had a lovely time. You know, it wasn't weighing on my mind. I started chemo again, and it went okay.
I mean, like everybody else, Annie has good days and bad days. And some days, you know, you're in pain, you're nauseous, whatever it is, from the treatment. It's not easy, and I really do believe that the psilocybin has continued to buoy up her spirits.
I want to spend more time with the people who are important in my life, and my relationship with my mother improved because I finally told her. She was very anti-drug, and I played a radio show that I was on for her, and we have gotten so much closer since I opened up that part of my life to her. I don't look ahead as far. This time of year, I'd be ordering plants for the spring to put in my garden, but I'm much more focused on this moment right now. What we did, it probably would have taken me years of therapy. And I would recommend psilocybin treatment for anyone with a terminal or potentially terminal illness. It's incredibly helpful. It's more helpful than any other treatment I've ever had.
I think I want that choice. Don't you want that choice? I mean, you may choose to never. You know, maybe it's just, you know, there's a wall, there's a fear, whatever. I'm not telling you should or shouldn't do anything. What I'm telling you is, shouldn't you have the choice if you want it? Because guess what? At least from this side of the veil, as I like to call it, all our stories end the same way. And it's very real. And if you've lost somebody, you know what I'm talking about. My best friend, he lost his daughter. I just said goodbye to my sister a year and a half ago. I had 7 weeks to say goodbye from her diagnosis to her death. And if I'm given that 7 weeks, you bet your ass. And by the way, I've already done it. I've done it when my life was great. I'd done it when my life wasn't so great. I'd done it when I was depressed. And guess what? I don't want to say it cured my depression. But for the next 3 to 4 months, I couldn't get in a bad mood. And now it's... What they're starting to realize is, and these are Harvard studies and different studies, it's probably or is helping to regenerate brain cells. In other words, it's like repairing the highways in your brain. And so your brain just being wired for fear, depression, sadness. It's going, oh yeah, here's the bridge back to you. Here's the path. We're going to build it back for you. And the substance, as you can hear her say, wasn't just she was happy while she was on it. She wasn't just happy a week later. Months have gone by. Don't you want that choice? Now think of this. Instead of just going into a cow pasture, and picking a whole bunch of them, and just shoving it in your mouth, washing them first, while shoving it in your mouth, you get a specific, scientific, measured dosage. And you're under watch of doctors. Or nurses, or a psychotherapist, or someone. Did you hear how she talked about being afraid and they held her hand? Believe me, if you've done these substances, you already know what I'm talking about. If you do, I'm not telling you to go do them. I'm telling you, if you choose, do your research and please know where you're getting it from and trust it. I am not telling you to do anything. I'm telling you, root for a choice. Because I'm speaking personally now. The few handful of times I did LSD, mind expansion. Rethinking things. Feeling more connected to people and everything other than people. Same thing with psilocybin. Same thing with MDMA. If you've ever been to a rave, you know what I'm talking about. It's temporary. And by the way, if there's an up, there's a down. With an artificial substance, LSD, MDMA, these are brewed up in a laboratory. If you notice, psilocybin doesn't leave you with a tremendous high and then crash you. It doesn't do it because it's grown in nature. DMT, grown in nature. Ayahuasca, grown in nature. Don't be afraid, you know, if I have to believe if you're listening to a show like this, that you have either done it, are curious about these things, want to do some research on them, and this is why I want to remind you, like I said earlier in the show, if you've done it, testify. Hey, my brother's been talking to me in 3 years. You know what? I love him, but fuck him. He doesn't get it. He doesn't want to get it. And he doesn't want to do what this woman's mother did. Listen and learn. I'm not saying it won't change. It'll change your life. I'm not saying it's supposed to be the beautiful thing in your life. I'm saying is you should have the goddamn choice to do it. Versus big pharma that creates school shooters. You see, this woman say, yeah, I'm going to die. Might as well take a bunch of people with me. She's like, no, I feel love and empathy and connection. There's no profit in mushrooms. There's no profit in growing your own weed. Big Pharma doesn't want you, or the military-industrial complex, or the prison-industrial complex, or the banking institutions. They don't want you feeling empathetic about people halfway around this world. They want you hating Haji. You should be able to have your own choice on what you put in your body. Amber Lyon, AmberLyon, reset.me, reset.me. I played you one video, and this is what I love about what Amber's doing. Oh, by the way, I'm going to send her this show. I had her on a Dangerous Conversation a while back, but I'm actually going to send her this show and go, girl, we need to get you back on. Because what her website is doing is just compiling story after story after story. And that's lots of different substances here we're talking about. We're not just, you know, grandma smoking pot. Psilocybin made me grateful to be alive. Watch how ayahuasca can break addiction's grip on the brain. Ibogaine helping people come off of heroin. Explaining the magic effect of psilocybin. Family moves to Colorado to access medical marijuana for their epileptic children. If you notice, I didn't even go there tonight. Nothing pisses me off more than parents not being able to choose something for their goddamn kids. Are you kidding me? Just story after story after story. And hey, by the way, if you got a story, let her know about it. Let her build the database of actual experiences with these substances, and we will all get by the fear. And once more and more people are educated, like it is with cannabis now, little by little, you might see them, maybe they just reschedule them to schedule from a schedule 1 to a schedule 2. And this is what you're seeing. I told you earlier, the U.S. Army is looking into those substances to treat their soldiers. 22 a day are offing themselves on booze and antidepressants. And now they're starting to look into these substances. Progress is being made. It's a beautiful thing. Absolutely. Boy, that was a fast 2 hours, wasn't it? Just listen. The internet is there for you. Watch the videos. Learn. Even if you never do the substance, at least you will know more about them, and you might be able to talk about them with an intellect and information backing you, and you might be able to actually talk some of the fearful people off the cliff, and I think that's vital. Information is power. It always will be. When it comes to what you put in your body, hey, you can OD on aspirin. You can OD on caffeine. And I mean dead. But you can't OD on psilocybin. It won't kill you. You can take a little too much. And you definitely can never OD on cannabis. This is the beauty of what we call nature is put in front of us. 5,000 years ago, people in the Far East learned this shit. And now modern medicine has a book of, oh, I don't know, 350 ailments and 174 pills they want to shove down your throat. I don't think you need them. I don't think I need them either. And if you are on them and they work for you, you know what? We call that free will and free choice. Good for you. Absolutely. We're not all supposed to be alike. And by the way, the reason I said that is I got a text from one of my friends. They're listening to the show. And they've been on it for 10 years, and they basically would like to come off, but they're just afraid. They're just afraid. You're making me curious. Well, that's my gig. That's my gig. All right, guys, that is another Dangerous Conversation. We went a little long, but that's okay. And I appreciate it, and we'll talk to you next week right here at RadioInfluence.com.